Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
So today, I'm going to give you 4 jokes, and if you laugh at any of them, I'll be surprised. So today in the show, we're going to be talking about genetic engineering and, okay. and genetic programming. So I looked up genetic jokes. And okay. Here's the top 4.
Okay.
What has 4 poles, 2 plates, a bunch of squiggly stuff, and is purple?
What?
Meiotic grapes.
I guess one would have to have an operating definition of meiotic.
What do you call...
for that to work?
A Drosophila who likes to drink.
What?
A barfly.
You know, I was proud because I knew what a... whatever that...
What did that one okay. Drosophila say to the other Drosophila?
Wait, what did one... What?
What did one Drosophila
okay.
say to the other Drosophila?
What?
Your human is down. How can you better understand genetics in cold weather?
How?
Put your coat on. C-O-D-O-N. Coat on. So, neither of us are genetic engineers.
No. What did the ones that have to do with flies have to do with genetics?
I think they're used for... They use those fruit flies for rapid genetic engineering tests.
You know what always sells a joke is that after you say it, you have to say, you know how they use Drosophila for rapid genetic engineering tests? Well,
that's
that welcomes
works.
You to another. Oh, I actually clicked on another. Sorry.
So
another open window. Well, that welcomes us to another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. You waited for those 4 jokes 2 weeks because we were off last week for Portland at the movies. Our other podcast that we do with the Unipiper, we reviewed a movie called Fatal Revenge.
Fatal Revenge.
Which is this amazing, terrible
yes.
action
yes.
taekwondo
yes.
explosion
yeah.
movie.
Biggest explosions ever.
Yeah. Back before I
filmed
think
in Portland.
Filmed in Portland, yeah. Before you had to have a lot of permits to do things legally.
Filmed right at the end of the 80s and never released in the United States. We found a copy dubbed in German in Germany. And so we now have a friend who is native German who's translating it back into English because we don't have the script for the English
right.
portion.
And there's no copy of it that we can watch to know what the script is.
And so we are having it retranslated back into the native English tongue.
Right. So it'll be a bad, what did you call that, a 360
It's a 360 translation because it was originally done in English, then uh-huh. translated to German.
Probably badly.
Poorly. And then translated back. And our translator, Victor, he was curious about the language used in the film. He said, it's using a lot of old German language. Like instead of calling it a gun, they call it a cannon and things that
they call beer, fire, water.
Right. Right. And so he's like, do you want me to keep it in the old style? I'm like, absolutely.
I was
going to
say, I know,
as
I know
terrible
I wasn't
as
there,
possible.
But I can trust you.
Absolutely.
Because there was a couple of curse words. I can't remember what it was now. Ass fiddle was one of them.
Ass fiddle is,
that,
is
but...
the one.
And I'm like, he better say to keep that. That's
of course.
Amazing.
Of course. So.
Well, I was going to say, I guess it's appropriate that none of those jokes landed because I am not in much of a mood to laugh, and that's because something kind of rocked my world on the way over here. Now, you know how much of a creature of habit I am. I have the things in my pocket that I need at the time. I need to know where I'm going. I need to know all those things. One of those things that I need to know is where are my locations to get a dollar refill for my stupid tacky Big Gulp drink? And which places have caffeine-free Diet Coke, which is what I drink so that I don't stay up? And one of those places around your house, Mark, was the 7-Eleven that right. I took you to and went off.
Right.
I stopped there today.
One up in Burnside?
Yep, up on Burnside and what? 60th. And they did not. They replaced my caffeine-free Diet Coke. And they were out of ice. So, and there was this, oh my gosh, I forgot, almost forgot about this. So I was already in a bad mood.
Jeez.
I know. And it's world shattering to me because like there's nowhere else around here that has caffeine-free Diet Coke.
No one understands Todd's fascination or a dependence on caffeine-free Diet Coke. And it's lasted for decades, as long as I've known you.
Yeah. It's a total security blanket.
Right.
Yeah.
And
oh, I showed up to when I was a guest on the Not Nerd. I hauled my stupid bucket of pop in with me. But
no drinks in here, please.
No drinks in here, please. The equipment is very sensitive, and we are going to discuss. That's my impression of the Not Nerd podcast. But I went up back to the parking lot, and there was a white van that had its side door open, no windows. And it just looked like it was kind of dark inside. And there was a guy kind of standing up, you know, in the back of the van and kind of leaning out. And it was kind of dark, but just looked like there was just a bunch of, you know, crap in there.
Rod and reel with some candy on it.
Right. Except not so much rod and reel and candy. A woman who looked like Betty Davis from Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Yes.
With, she must have been like in her 60s. If not, right. She has led a very difficult life. But like, with this platinum blonde longer hair, but like all but pancake makeup. I mean, it was white makeup and right. like had these crazy platformish. I'm pretending I don't know the term wedges for shoes. Somehow that would emasculate me at this point.
Right.
Had these that wedges on. Yeah. He was so masculine up to this point, but then the wedges lost me. Kind of teetering on those shoes and not... dressed kind of like the Courtney Love baby doll. Not a lot of skin showing. She had like lots of clothes on and jacket. And then a younger male with a denim vest was there. And I was so confused. I tried to take a picture, but I thought they were going to kill me if I attracted their attention. But then they were like trying to load the lady who was like kind of wobbling back and forth, like back in the... So I didn't know what was going on.
Oh,
but
Betty.
Yeah, Davis, how far are you falling?
That is one of my favorite movies. And the house that was filmed at, the mansion... where it all takes place was about 3 blocks from my old place in Hollywood.
Oh, wow, really?
And so I'd walk the pug down there.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's exactly...
And that movie holds up, too. And I haven't seen... There's a new miniseries based on that. I don't know anything about it. It's like a 7-episode thing about the making of that movie. And I think Susan Sarandon and Faye Dunaway.
Sid and Nancy?
Like that. No. They're from from the punk band
Andre,
The Sex Pistols.
Andre Vincent Noble says Sid and Nancy. On a different note, today a package arrived that I ordered on eBay. And so the story is about 15 years ago, I acquired one of these. And I had a really weird interaction with a friend of a friend of mine who basically took this item from me. And let me tell you the story.
Interesting.
So I bought a Playboy.
Oh my gosh, it has the brown wrapper on it and everything. Oh, it's all...
It is entirely in Braille.
Oh,
and so
it's goodness.
It's the Playboy.
The National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, the Library of Congress.
Yeah.
Braille edition, January 1984.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Part 2 of 5 parts.
Yeah, they come in big old slabs.
So this is the size of, I would say, a record. It's like 12 by 12 square, and it's printed on grocery store bag type of, you can hear.
Yeah, it's
all
cardstock. It's just blank.
I was gonna say there's no page numbers, but yeah, and they are just poked holes. I mean, it's not like it's not a raised surface. It looks like they just ran it through a machine that had little pins and needles. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. But there is, The front cover does say have the Playboy
to the camera.
It's printed Playboy on the top, and it just has a picture of the Playboy bunny on the top.
Right, and that's it. And then somebody scribbled some stuff on the back.
Amazing.
Right. So I had one of these about 15 years ago, and I loved having it around because it is such a talking piece.
Yeah.
Because people say they read Playboy for the articles, and this only has the articles. There's literally no
just
words,
the articles.
You know, except in Braille.
Right.
And so it's just kind of a comic relief to have up on your thing. Well, I had a friend who had a blind boyfriend, and we were casual friends. We'd been out to dinner maybe twice, but we weren't like close buddies. But he, as a blind person, just insisted on taking it, and he just took it. And
I would never do that. I would drop subtle hints until you just wanted to shut me up, and you'd say,
"No,
fine,
he just took it." And my other friends were like guilting me about it, and it was really weird. And I gave it up because there was like three people against me
guilting you, that you were like,
why do you need that? I'm like, what?
Oh,
it's
not
mine.
Like guilting you that you owned a Playboy somehow.
No,
but like that you were mad that someone stole from you.
Right. I know. It was such a weird interaction. And so I kind of held on to that, you know, weird little interaction for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, and I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, I bet I can go on eBay. And sure enough,
so this
I just
is the January 1984 is the 30th anniversary issue.
What?
And the actual cover of it
looks just like that.
It does look like that. It's just a gold,
oh my goodness,
a gold printout of the Playboy bunny logo. So I don't think they would reprint the different covers. I would imagine that the Braille version is.
They all look like that.
All
in all the
like
pictures
that
I've seen.
That is so. Yeah, it has the last photos of Marilyn Monroe in it. It has that is so cool. Interesting. I'm gonna have to take some pictures of that.
Yeah,
creepy. I'm gonna take a picture of Playboy before I go.
Perv.
Nice. So. Another thing that I had, I forgot to put on our list here before we get into news, is that Liam, who is the younger brother of my buddy Colin that I take care of, turned 10. And we were sitting around talking, and I got him a Newton's cradle that I ordered off the internet because I didn't have time to go. Yeah, he said when he opened it up, he's kind of a little old man. For his 10th birthday, he wanted and then got this miniature couch from IKEA with like these matching throw pillows and area rug to make his room look like a little apartment. And so I got him, he wants little things for his desk, so I got him the Newton's cradle for that. But he's learning to play the cello, and he asked me, what is older, a piano or a cello? Which came first? So what is your answer to that?
I believe it's cello.
Okay.
The piano or the pianoforte, had different iterations.
Are you mansplaining a piano to me? Yeah. Well, the pianoforte is what they call
pianoforte
it.
Pianoforte is... in Italian, it's pianoforte.
Pianissimo.
No, which means really
that
soft.
Means quiet.
There were iterations before the piano, you know, the harpsichord and other instruments preceded that, whereas the current version of the cello, I think, has been around longer than the modern version of the piano.
Okay. I'll give you that. So the cello is older than the piano. So when do you think the cello came about? When was the cello invented?
I think it was invented... I think it was invented 400 years ago.
Okay. And then what about the piano?
The piano,
excited
300 years ago.
Okay, so the cello was invented in about 1600, so that is 400 years ago. Yeah. The piano was invented in 1700, which is 300 years ago, and I hate you. So for people listening, I legitimately have never
I've never
ever spoken
I've,
to Mark about this.
And I've
he
never,
never
looked up that data
thought
before.
About it.
No.
any of it.
Nothing.
So this is why we started the podcast, by the way. So I could just ask these questions in person. But I for some reason, I figured the cello would be older just because it's a stringed instrument. And we've had those like since the lyre, I guess, however old that is. Right. You'd think that would have. But I mean, obviously it came after, you know, the bigger instruments went down the small one. And for some reason, I thought piano would have been a lot older, too. Like, it seems weird that every single piano song ever written is only 300 years old. You know?
Right.
I don't know. I found that a little strange. Anyway, well, moving on to some news. Great apes know when wrong decision. Oh, you know what I have?
Wait.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I think I.
Do you have something?
I have one more thing.
Okay.
So I was talking to somebody at work today who's working at a startup. And he's working on a startup called Cinema Draft. And okay. Cinema Draft is a type of sports for Hollywood nerds.
Okay.
Whereas if you are doing fantasy football leagues, you are choosing your individual players from different things and you're assembling a fictitious team. Cinema Draft, you pick stars from different Hollywood genres and cinemas, and you create your all-star cast, and then it calculates box office rewards and whoever makes the most money as a cinema team.
Interesting. I've heard of that concept before.
So weird.
But I could see why it's, it's just as interesting. It seems like it'd take a lot longer because, I mean,
and I feel like you have a lot more
40 games a year or something like that.
Right.
You pick an actor that has a movie.
We generally know all the major blockbusters that are coming out in the next 18 months.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it seems pretty rigged. Like I would just look at IMDb.
Put all your money on Fast and Furious 8, which I believe had a bigger opening than Star Wars worldwide, which is pretty crazy. Or at least Star Wars Rogue One.
That's all I had.
That's all you had.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to add this. I did it last week and I asked if you had listened back and you said no, and I hadn't either, but we used, some pleasant teletype music underneath our news. So great apes know when a wrong decision has been made. That's too loud. Next week, I'm going to bring that sound bite in. Okay. There we go. That's better. So great apes know when the wrong decision is being made, which is a process usually reserved for humans. Understanding when someone else has a false belief is a mark of advanced social thought, which we thought apes were incapable of. But there was a test involving a person placing an object in one of two boxes. Another person then took this object out of the box, put it into another box, and then locked both boxes. So the first person stayed in the room, so that person knew the object had been moved. But if that person left the room and came back in and went to go to that first box where he saw the thing put in, but it was moved, the great ape, it would know and clue them in to know, you know, it's over here. It's been moved over here. So, like human infants, great apes were more likely to help the person to find the object when they had, when they knew that the other person, was going to make the wrong decision. So just another thing that apes are capable of. It's kind of funny that one of the topics I have that I eventually want to do on the show is like how memory works and how the brain works. Mm. But I'm glad I haven't, because this article starts, "For decades, we've thought that memories were formed in two distinct stages, first short-term and then long-term, but we might be wrong. New research suggests that our brains make two copies of each memory in the moment that they are formed. One is filed away in the hippocampus, which is where the short-term memories go, and the other is stored in the cortex, where the long-term memories go. The findings upend more than 50 years of accepted neuroscience." So a long time ago, there was a famous patient who had a stroke, and he was unable to make new memories because he had damage to the hippocampus. But when there's still so new research suggests that when there's a link when the link is blocked in between those two areas of the brain, that's when you don't develop new short-term memories. But when that connection is present, both areas of the brain light up at the same time. And for the first few days when you recall that memory, the neurons in the hippocampus are the ones that fire up. But eventually, the neurons in the cortex start lighting up when you recall that memory for long term. And I flagged at the end of this story because this sounds terrifying to me. There's a couple of these stories that kind of end up sounding terrifying, which I think fits into the CRISPR thing, because from your reaction of what we're going to learn, it's slightly terrifying. But the researchers based at the Riken MIT Central for Neurocircuit Genetics in Japan, they used a relatively new technique known as optogenetics to trace memory formation. Optogenetics involves genetically engineering animals, in this case mice, to express a light-sensitive protein in certain neurons. By implanting fine fiber optic cables into their brains, they'll light up or be light-sensitive, and they just breed that into animals, which I think is terrifying. But news out of the Northwest, my alma mater, Washington State University in Pullman, Washington, is in the news, and not just for having stupid frat boy riots like they usually do. Washington State University physicists have created a fluid with negative mass, which is exactly what it sounds like. Push it, and unlike every physical object in the world we know, it doesn't accelerate in the direction it was pushed. It accelerates backwards. Hypothetically, matter can have negative mass in the same sense that electric charge can be positive or negative, but people rarely think of it in these terms. We think of it in the Newton's second law of motion, in which force is what, Mark?
Force is mass times acceleration.
The force is mass of an object times its acceleration, F equals ma. That's what most things do, this researcher said. There's two dense sections of how this works, but it's some sort of liquid that they freeze just, you know, absolute zero, blah, blah, blah. But once you push it, it accelerates backwards. Who acted as a theorist, this guy said it, and it's made out of rubidium. And then in a terrifying example of hubris, this scientist says, what's a first here is the exquisite control we have over nature without any other complications. Yeah. He says, all but ensuring some sort of horrifying death.
As he heads off to Jurassic Park.
So that's another tool that the engineers can use in astrophysics and cosmological stuff like black holes and dark energy.
There, by the way, there's an amazing conversation going on in chat.
Yeah, what is it?
It has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Oh, nice.
It's just, it's a long, lengthy.
I'll have to go back and read it.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
Okay, well, moving on. So this kind of coincided with another thing that I had written down to talk about this week. And this story is Burger King had an ad where it said, okay, Google. And Google was irritated with Burger King, which had to introduce a television ad intended to prompt the voice-activated Google devices to describe its burgers. A video from Burger King said you are watching a 15-second Burger King ad, which is unfortunately not enough time to explain all the fresh ingredients in the Whopper sandwich. But I've got an idea. Okay, Google, what's in the Whopper burger? So prompted by the phrase, okay, Google, the Google Home device kicks in and goes to Wikipedia. But they had to shut it down because Burger King did not work with Google on the ad. So the Whopper ad was a second example of a marketer using Google Home. A few weeks ago, some devices apparently played brief, unexpected promotions for Beauty and the Beast after the weather forecast. A Google spokeswoman said, this is another terrifying thing of the week, said the Disney promotion, quote, wasn't intended to be an ad and was part of a feature that provides daily information to Google Home users and sometimes shares timely content. She added, we're continuing to experiment with new ways to interface with users. So, but that reminded me of another thing. I was watching Saturday Night Live and I was watching it live over the air, which I haven't done in a long time. And there was an ad that it was for the Saturday Night Live app. And it said, it was just like one of those 10-second things. And it said, okay, Siri, download the Saturday Night Live app. And that was it. And apparently, that if you have Siri on, will that trigger your Siri to do that? Because it tied exactly into this.
It could.
Like, I don't like that at all.
No. It's all terrible.
It's all bad news.
I've, after... after researching our topic tonight, I've given up. I'm like,
is it one of those times where you're glad you're not younger, so you don't have to live as much in the in the apocalyptic future that we no doubt have around the corner?
We saw Gattaca, right?
Not a lot of people saw Gattaca.
I saw Gattaca, and that's what CRISPR is.
It's an interesting time to be alive. When I was casually just rechecking news headlines today to see if we were at World War III. Speaking of, I guess we weren't. Speaking of space, which we were not, NASA's Cassini mission to Saturn provides new details about the icy ocean-bearing moons of Jupiter and Saturn. So Cassini announced that a form of chemical energy that life can feed on appears to exist on Saturn's moon Enceladus. Is that how you say that? Enceladus?
No, I don't know.
And Hubble researchers report additional evidence of plumes of that erupting from Jupiter's moon Europa. The paper indicates hydrogen gas, which could potentially provide a chemical energy source for life, is pouring into the subsurface oceans, and there's a lot of hydrothermal activity. So we're getting some really, really cool pictures from NASA. They have a really cool Facebook feed, too, where they give nice little brief descriptions and some really neat pictures. So, all right, a couple more stories. I know when you opened my stories document, you're like, how many stories do we have?
It was 7 pages long.
It's because we skipped a week.
Right, that's true. I do have one. So massive drops in cost of renewable energies are flipping the energy markets upside down. So the cost of renewable energies of solar and wind have dropped 18 and 28% this last year. And so people are getting more energy was produced with them, and the overall cost was lower.
Okay.
There was one other bit to that, but it was, but I didn't write that one down. I don't have much else other than staggering number of
people using renewable energy at a cost savings to both themselves and the energy producer.
Exactly. And the, really? Like all of the politics, really, all of the politics around, the rhetoric around renewable energies of like, it's taking jobs and there's like, it is, because there's such a bigger market and the price is going down, and
just like Blu-rays are taking the VHS market and jobs.
Exactly.
And I think I read something, either Scotland or Ireland is using all renewable wind energy power as well, I believe.
Yeah. There's both them and Norway is doing a tremendous amount.
Yeah. So write to your representatives and make sure they back clean coal.
Yep.
There's a new website. Was that the end of your story?
Hold on. Oh. Well, just one second.
Breaking news.
I know it. I know what it was. So the price per kilowatt per megawatt hour of energy used with these renewable energies equates to 2.9 cents per kilowatt hour versus what we spend on an average, which is 12 cents.
Oh,
so
wow.
One quarter the cost with renewable energies.
Wow.
And so the price of energy is just tumbling as more renewable energies are being introduced. The cost of the equipment is going down, and the cost of production is going down, and the production amount is going up. Mm-hmm. And so it's really shifting the energy market. That's
wow.
What I wanted to say.
Interesting. All right. Well, there's a new website has been created so that people can look up their address and find out how many people have died there. The website is called diedinhouse.com and uses information from news announcements, death certificates, and police records to identify whether or not one or more people have died at an address. It is a paid service, and the site charges around $12 for a basic search. You can have an expanded search of whether any incidents have occurred at your house, such as meth usage. And the answer to that in Portland is yes, there has been some sort of meth use at your property, new or old, whether or not you've been living there at some point. So the data goes back to the 1980s when they began digitizing the records. The owner of the website said he had found out that somebody had died in his house that he was about to purchase, and he thought that the owners, he said he thought owners should have to notify potential purchasers about this type of information, but that's not legally required. He started to look into it and realized that there's no one place to go, so he started his own. There's about 4.5 million houses across the U.S. alone that have had people die in them. So visit diedinhouse.com and pay your $12 to see if anyone died there.
When I look up our address, it puts a disclaimer at the top that says, Oregon does not consider a prior death in the home, even where the cause of death is suicide or homicide, to be a material fact that must be disclosed.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. I guess they wouldn't, even if you asked, it's not like they have to tell you the truth. All right. So I'll skip some of these stories that somebody did research that the red shirts on Star Trek don't actually die more. The guy figured out that 25 deaths is only 10% of the total red shirt population, whereas 10 gold shirts is 18%. And so he did the math to figure out that, because that's always the old joke that in Star Trek, the red shirts die. So because there are more people wearing the red shirts, because that's maintenance, that's all like, because there's more of them, even though more died in the series, in all, it would have been a smaller percentage of the whole, just because.
It was never the fact of the percentage. It was just if they were wearing a red shirt and they were going down to the surface of whatever planet, you knew that were not coming back up.
Percentage wide, when you look at the numbers. That's the voice I used when I was in a church play this last weekend, and I had to play a dorky older person pretend to be a superhero, and I use that voice. The booby doctor is in. anyway. So also, if you are a senior citizen, for the rest of this year, I believe you can get a lifetime National Parks Pass for $10. So I already notified my mom and dad, which are probably the only senior citizens who ever listen to this show. But
my mom listens.
Oh, but is your mom a senior citizen? No, she's much too young for that.
No. No,
she's my age. She looks like she's in her 30s.
Well, she does.
But yeah, so, and that also includes the Fish and Wildlife Service, the USDA Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and the Bureau of Reclamation, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So National Park Service for lifetime AARP pass is $10. And finally, two little Oregon stories. If you've hit and killed a deer, you can go ahead and eat it now if you're in Oregon. Senate Bill 372 would allow the Fish and Wildlife to issue salvage permits for deer and elk that are accidentally killed in a vehicle collision. Approximately 20 other states have the same law, including Washington and Idaho. And in Washington, they issued 1,100 permits in the first 6 months. So that means 1,100 animals were salvaged in one degree or another from being roadkill. The bill only applies to deer and elk and contains provisions to discourage poaching. For example, the animal cannot be hit and killed off-road. And salvage is only for human consumption. The antlers must be turned over. So if you hit a deer, you can finally eat your venison. But one of the other good news is that Oregon voters may decide to toss a constitutional ban on duels. So right now, there's a thing up for vote where Senate Joint Resolution 44 would repeal Article 2, Section 9 from the Oregon Constitution. And that says anyone who offers, accepts, or knowingly participates in a duel can't hold public office. So now if you would like to accept or knowingly participate in a duel and still be a politician, you may now do that again.
But
so that was on the books.
Wow.
So
with that.
Okay.
Why don't we talk to the Unipiper and see what he has to say.
Perfect.
What's going on?
We'll do that, and we will come back and talk about CRISPR.
CRISPR.
See you in a bit.
Oh, sorry.
Hello, Brian. How are you today?
Hello.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Todd.
Oh, there we are. Did I speak too soon again?
You did. I was just about to say, there's a delay.
Oh, well, I waited this time. Oh, well.
not that much.
Next time, I'll just wait for 30 seconds as we both wonder whether or not the call connected. So what's going on in your world?
Oh, I'm just recovering from a busy Unipiper weekend. Yesterday, I was out doing a physically intensive Unipiper photo shoot for a project that I'll have coming up for everyone's favorite Star Wars related holiday.
Nice. Is that that's a guarantees?
That is. So I have to deliver now.
The OP better deliver on that one. There's a little Reddit nice. Joke there. Thank you.
Thanks.
So when is that going to all come together? When do we get to see something?
May the 4th.
Okay. Oh, yes. That's right. That's coming up, huh?
Bom, bom, bom.
Bom, bom. Is there going to be any big, anything big going on in town that day? Is there any, are there any events?
I've already had to turn down several gigs for that date because I am going to be out of town on a super secret Unipiper mission.
Oh my!
Yeah, that I will. I very much look forward to telling folks about, but I can't do that just yet. But just say that there's some big Unipiper plans in the works.
My goodness, you are all guarantees today.
Cool. One thing I can talk about that happened on Saturday, I had an amazing time. I did a joint show with my good friend Mosho the Cat Rapper.
Yeah. Yes, and that is exact for people who may not have heard of Mosho. The cat rapper. It is exactly that, a person who raps about cats.
And with cats.
What's that?
And with cats.
Oh, and with, yeah. I'll see pictures of him too, where he's draped in cats, some of them hairless. One of the videos, I believe, was him bathing one of the cats.
And himself
for a reason. He was clothed. But yeah, so Mosho, the cat rapper. Yeah, so you did a show with him on Saturday. Where at?
So it's in conjunction and a collaboration with a place called Graphletics, and they are a Portland-based athletic apparel company. They do some really cool, mostly sports team, like Blazers and Timbers-inspired wear, but they also do a lot of community outreach, and they are very big into a lot of the same ideals that the Unipiper holds so close to his heart, like keeping Portland weird. So they reached out and wanted to do a collaboration, and together we came up with a Graphletics Unipiper limited edition t-shirt. So it was part of the show was celebrating the launch of that shirt, which everybody should go check out because it is like my new favorite Unipiper shirt.
And yeah, it's really cool. I've seen pictures of it, and it's kind of it has the word weird on it, but instead of the I, it's your profile.
Right, and then I'm riding on the Burnside Bridge, which is, of course, where my most famous Unipiper images, where I'm on the bridge, come from. So it kind of ties it all together nicely.
Perfect. And I'll use that. I'll use that image this week for the show, I think, or
cool,
at least link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, and so that shirt is now available from the Graphletics website at graphletics.com, GRAFLETICS.
Nice. So quick question about, like, when you go out to, quote-unquote, perform at something like this, how...
Quote-unquote.
I mean, I don't...
Like he actually performs.
I don't mean to condescend to your little... No, what I mean is, like, there's a finite amount, you know, of performing, I meant. Is it a length of time that you always contract, or is it, and in that time, is there a certain amount of like ride rounds? I know that's kind of what you did at the convention. You would have certain times, but like, how does that work at an event where you go to do something like that?
Yeah. So when I am one of the attractions that people are coming to see, you have to play to your crowd and give them what they want. If it's a crowd that knows anything about bagpipes, they're probably going to want to listen a little bit longer. In this case, it was a very Portland-based crowd, so they came with very many questions for the Unipiper. So we did an extensive Unipiper Q&A.
Oh, that's cool.
And we dispelled many Unipiper myths. So,
what's one of the Unipiper myths?
Well, the one that came up a lot this weekend that I was really surprised by is all the people that thought like Unipiper was a troop of Unipipers. And I just kind of blew their mind when I told them that I was the only one. And they're like, so every time I see that picture, it's you?
That's so funny.
Yeah.
You're like Kaiser Soze. You're spoken as like as if a multiple person or a ghost or a does he exist? Does he not?
I know, I know. So, you know, even in Portland, there are so many myths to dispel about the Unipiper.
That's so funny.
Something else that I've been doing this week that I didn't think I would ever get to say I was doing again, but I've been watching brand new episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yes,
as I watched one last night.
Oh yeah, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it as much as I remember enjoying the other ones. Mystery Science Theater 3000 to me, I really do like, but I never cared for the little skits that went in between it. Like that was just never my thing. So I always fast forwarded through those and didn't really care for those. But it seemed like it was the same show, but you know, I thought they pulled it off really well.
Yeah, as far as these like Netflix revival shows go, I felt like this one more so than any other just kind of felt like a real continuation of kind of where they left off, and it could have just been going the whole time.
Yep, I totally agree. I think part of that is probably because we don't see like they haven't aged 25 years or whatever. Like there's the new guy, and then obviously Crow T Robot crow's feet. I was gonna say. But anyway, yeah, I thought they've done a great job. I've only seen one of the episodes so far, but yeah, I totally agree with you.
I'm watching the second one right now, and it's all about Bigfoot, and it is fantastic.
Nice. I skipped to the third one, I think, is what I started, which is Time Travelers or something like that. But cool. Yeah, it's pretty great.
Going on in Portland tomorrow, of course, a lot of folks might know, maybe they don't, that Portland still has a mounted police division.
Yes,
they do.
Have you guys heard about this that's going on right now?
No.
I guess it comes up every few years, and it's come up again that they're threatening to slash and cut the budget for the mounted police division, which they would have to then get rid of. And then usually if history is to repeat itself, a private donor steps in and puts the bill and keeps the mounted police going. It's at this point, it's almost as much tradition, I think, as it is like actual serving a purpose.
Right. Well, I can see the purpose of the two things that I always see them do. And one of those is to go up and down the park blocks, like in the actual park portion of it.
Right.
And the other is, I don't know if you're aware of this, but in Portland, we have a lot of, not riots, but we have a lot of downtown get-togethers where people are angry every Friday at something or other. And I think those are effective crowd control tools. And I don't know if there's any way to measure or quantify that, but I would imagine an officer on a horse in the midst of a crowd has more control over it than, you know, someone it's in a car or trying to stand down at everyone else's level.
Sure. They are very fun to see, though.
Yeah, they're really cool. So hopefully someone somehow saves them.
You yourself have a voice in the matter, Todd, because
I do.
Tomorrow at the Mount Scott Community Center, they are having an open budget hearing, and they're encouraging the Save the Mounted Portland Police Patrol Foundation is encouraging everyone to show up to show support for the Mounted Patrol and voice their opinion and hopefully encourage the Portland City Council not to cut the budget for the Mounted Police.
Nice. Well, yep, there you go. There's something we can all do and that I won't do. what else is going on?
I don't know. it's Pizza Week in Portland.
Ooh.
What?
What does that mean?
That means that there are something like 30 pizza shops throughout town that are offering $2 pizza slices in addition to some other pizza-related specials. Really, it's just a ploy, much like the Willamette Week-sponsored Burger Week that they usually have. It's something in the very similar vein also.
Sponsored. I do. I heard someone talking about, and by someone I mean Sarah from Fun Employment Radio, talking about that last year, like every day going to a different place and trying one of their pizzas for the special price. So that's cool.
Yeah, it's really just trying to get people awareness of all the multitude of pizza places in Portland and get out and try some new pizza.
Nice. And I do have a quick note. There's something happening, I believe, is this weekend, the 22nd? I would imagine that, right? Friday and Saturday?
Yes, it is.
There's something happening called the Revenge of the Nerd Camp, and a couple of people that we know are involved with it. And you can go to Facebook. They have a Facebook page for Revenge of the Nerd Camp, and get a quick read. A little summary of it. It's a I think an overnight camp, so it starts Friday night, and I could be getting this wrong, but this is what I think is happening, and then goes overnight into Saturday, and there's events and things happening the entire time. This says it's at the Analog Cafe for a full day of tabletop gaming, comics with books with pictures, a pop-up Multnomah County Library, panels, raffles, prizes, and more. You can collect merit badges for the different things that you try. It's a 20-day all-day admission, but there's a special this is for a concert promotion, but yeah, it's worth checking out if that sounds like something up your alley. It's called Revenge of the Nerd Camp, and I know our friend Aaron Duran from Geek in the City is going to be a panelist on for one of the panels that they have there, but you can find out more on Facebook. So
cool.
Anyway, well, good. Well, it was nice talking to you after our week off, although last week we did get together for our Fatal Revenge episode of Portland at the Movies.
Fatal Revenge.
If anyone has not taken the plunge into Portland at the Movies yet, I can say that there is no better time to give it a listen, because Fatal Revenge was the most fun that we have had, I would say, on that show yet.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a great show. You can check that out at portlandatthemovies.com. But if they wanted to find out about you, what could they do?
Please go check out my website at unipiper.com. In the words of Nick, it is what sort of a website? very handmade.
Oh, yeah.
Homegrown?
So yeah,
grassroots.
We had dinner last night, and Nicholas brought up the Unipiper website and ham-fistedly tried to like ask if you were ever gonna update it, and then called you a sellout, and then insulted how old your webpage looked. So,
which I'm very proud. I worked hard to get it to look that way. If someone wanted to go there and actually look at it, I would feel justified in my efforts.
Well, there you go. There's a guarantee to go visit your website. Everyone go to the unipiper.com to see what it is that Nick explained it that way. But well, fantastic. We will talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us, Brian.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Bye.
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 All right. So today we are going to talk about the clustered, regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats, or CRISPR.
I barely knew her.
Okay, I'll try not to use that too much, but I believe that will be the show title too. I was talking to Brian yesterday, yeah. And we told him we were going to do CRISPR, and he, of course, said I barely knew her for the title, and this will be, I think, the third time that I've used that in, I don't know, we've done 82 shows. So yeah, so CRISPR, which is something actually listener Andre said, asked if we could talk about it, and it's an acronym that I see all the time, but I don't really know anything about it other than I've seen it a couple times, and it seems to be a big deal, but that's about all I can say about it. So what was the acronym again?
Clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats.
Huh.
And even after I've watched maybe 3 hours of information about CRISPR, that whole sequence of words describe a whole bunch of things going on that really need to be a
genetic. I'm not going to be able to suss out anything on my own by chewing on those words.
No, I haven't been able to. You might be able to, but
it takes a scientific mind, Mark.
Right. So what I thought, let's first talk about the problem. The problem is our genetic makeup and any animal genetic makeup or plant genetic makeup, there are about 20,000 genes that make up us and our DNA. With 3 billion letters of DNA, all the AGT. And
R.
No.
S. P.
Adenine, guanine, thymine,
taurine. Like
taurine, not thymine.
Like in Red Bull. Red Bull gives us wings.
A, C, G, and T.
Okay.
So the nucleic acid sequence. So the problem with, or the, it's not a problem, it's the nature of DNA. The DNA holds all of the information that is used by our cells to replicate and pass on that genetic information. We get half of our genetics from our father, half from our mother, and together we now have our own unique set of genes, and we pass those on to our offspring, and we our individual cells, when they replicate or when they reproduce, use that DNA to make the next cell so that it passes on that information. There are nearly 3,000 diseases that are genetic diseases caused by a single gene, a single letter being out of place.
Wow.
in that sequence of the 3,000 gene, or in the
3 billion?
Yeah, not in the 3 billion, but in the 20,000 genes. So of the 20,000, if one is wrong, you can have sickle cell anemia.
Right.
Or
the thing
multiple
in
sclerosis,
my hand,
or the thing in your
hand. My claw that horrifies you.
Exactly.
The stuff nightmares are made out of, according to Mark's reaction to my hand.
Yes. And so for ages, we have tried to manipulate genetics in order to make things better. And so in the 60s, we tried with radiation on plants, and we just irradiated plants just to see
that
what
really
would come out on the other side.
Mankind's first step is just to bludgeon things to see if it breaks, if it cracks, if it explodes, if there's food inside.
Right. And,
wow.
And we came out with some stuff like,
like the Hulk.
Right, exactly. Little Shop of Horrors and stuff. But in the 70s, we became a little more sophisticated. In the 80s, even more so. In the 80s, we started doing business related to genetic engineering. And, you know, and really for hundreds of years, we have done a sort of genetic engineering just by natural selection of saying, we don't like these stubby little green bananas with thick skins.
Honest to God, I thought you were going to say pygmies. Like, there's like real people. I was going to be like, oh my gosh, Mark is going to say something.
Bananas.
Horrifying. We don't need these short, stubby people taking up place on this planet.
No.
When us tall normies.
Do not put racist things in my mouth.
It's okay. So, we don't have any pygmies out listening.
So, not anymore.
They can't reach the knob to turn us on.
We want bananas that have more banana flesh, smaller seeds, sweeter, the peel that comes off easily, and all those things. And so we have genetically engineered that plant out of its natural state that was hundreds of years ago into what we have today. And so we are a genetic engineering community of
well, and that's
humanity.
What that's what farming has done for centuries.
Exactly. So the problem is it's incredibly expensive or takes.
Oh wait, okay. So I have special effects for because when I walked in tonight and asked you, I was like, "Oh, how's the research going?" And you're like, and you just look terrified because like humanity's going to the end. So I got some dramatic sound effects for whatever your however's. So it's a. Okay.
It takes a tremendous amount of time, energy, money, and facility to do any genetic engineering of worthwhile up until recently.
Okay.
And up until recently is literally the last 4 years. In 2013, the CRISPR-Cas9 is what it's officially called, mechanism. We'll go into what that is. The process.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Is it a process or a product that is?
It is. Like it is machine. A process.
Okay.
It is a process.
Okay.
If you do this and this and this and this, then you will be able to do this. So it's a process.
Okay.
And the CRISPR-Cas9 process that has been formalized and repeatably, recreated, has literally dropped the price by 99%. Like,
oh my
it
gosh.
Is now 1% the cost to do genetic engineering than you could. It's incredibly fast and relatively easy. You still need a lab, but you don't need. You don't need a billion-dollar lab,
right?
You can do things in a nice.
So this is like a 3D printing of whatever this is,
right? Of genetic engineering,
of tampering with nature at its basest form.
Yeah, and the implications of the open sourcing of this, of being able to make this really available. Has incredible potential great things and really potentially terrible, terrible things. So we'll first talk about some of those things and then we'll get into what the CRISPR-Cas9 process is.
Okay.
I'll do my best to try and be a genetic engineer to describe it. But first,
so at the end of the episode, then we'll be able to go back and listen to the jokes at the beginning and we're really going to have a good laugh now. Now who's laughing?
So, being able to eradicate, engineer a mosquito that cannot carry malaria.
Mm-hmm.
And then put them into the wild to reproduce is incredibly hopeful.
Sure.
Creating a mosquito that naturally carries a death serum could be just as easy to produce.
Right.
And could be used by war machines to eradicate societies. And it's just as available.
Easy to do either.
Right. Which at the moment we are in beta 0.1 of this technology, but we're in the 80s of computing. And in very soon, this will be very widely available, very uncontrolled. And have huge ethical implications. So you want your child to be born with without the genes that cause Parkinson's. Awesome. You want your child to be born with blue eyes and lots of muscles.
Right.
Now
you don't want your child to be a filthy pygmy. I get it.
Right.
That I am on right. board with.
And it is a slippery slope of what's the dividing line between medically beneficial versus fashionable accessory.
Right.
In genetic engineering of people, because wouldn't you want your community to have smarter, more intelligent people in it?
Right.
And so let's just turn that knob and increase that.
Right.
Or more muscular or, have better metabolisms.
Only wealthy people are going to be able to afford this.
Right. Right.
To make a race of superhumans.
You buy two traits, you get the third free.
Oh my gosh.
Right? And none, like the whole movie Gattaca is about this.
Okay.
And
I'd say I've seen it years and years ago.
Yeah. And it's takes place in the future, and there's these clone people, and you know, or people that have been genetically master race people, and so Jude Law is, you know, the master race.
Jude Law is human perfection, apparently.
And and
I thought Ethan Hawke was in that movie.
Ethan Hawke was the genetically inferior person that was trying to masquerade as somebody who was,
and Uma Thurman is in that, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So, I mean, the whole deal is we won't be able to control this for much longer at all.
Right.
And, there will be a massive tension. Like if we have a CRISPR lab and they are producing superhumans, how much more vitriol hate will the commoner like myself and yourself have against them?
Right. Right.
And what a classism creation this will create.
Yeah, well, it's like in those science fiction movies where it's like, you were born in the real world.
Exactly. And
so now this, so CRISPR, just to kind of get my head around it,
okay,
is a process of doing things. So it's not a...
Let's talk about
it.
Okay. So basically, there is a technology that bacteria use to fight against viral infections. So viruses infect by actually injecting bad DNA into a bacteria. And so a bacteria will most of the time die. But sometimes it's able to take a little section of that bad DNA and store it away to be able to identify the bad DNA again in the future and become immune to it, because it goes, oh, that's bad DNA. I recognize that. And now I won't. And now I will eradicate
that again.
I'll slice
Fool
it.
Fool me once.
I'll slice it in half before you can do anything. Okay. And so there's,
I mean, honestly, our bodies. And they're crazy.
So there's a protein.
That's the name of my spinoff podcast. Honestly, our bodies. It's crazy how they work.
There's a protein and a what's called a it's a type of RNA that is so there's two components to this process. The protein has one job, and the one job is to, it is the thug, and its job is to slice very precisely a DNA strand. And it doesn't know when to do that. And so it tags along with a little chunk of RNA. And that little RNA has a very specific sequence that is a short sequence that it is looking down the DNA strand for. And once it finds that little match, that search engine match, it goes, ah, I found it. Now go ahead and cut this protein. And so the protein goes at exactly the right place and cuts that DNA strand in
half. How does it cut it?
It
with swords.
It is literally an atomic level knife.
That and is ridiculous.
It is all, it sounds farcical.
I don't
and
believe
weird.
You. It's
right. I've listened to at least 10 scientists talk and corroborate
that
this
is just
story.
Mind-boggling.
It is really mind-boggling. And so so that's step one, is cutting this DNA sequence in half. Step two is we introduce another RNA into it that patches that cut.
Right.
Because it matches the beginning and the end, and puts this new part in the middle that the rest of it doesn't
bother checking.
Bother checking. right?
Wow, we replaced part of your DNA with Folger's crystals.
Exactly. So I made a little, let's see if I can find it. See if I can. So it's as if we had a bad sequence of DNA, and the bad sequence of DNA says the Mark or Todd cast.
Right? Okay. So yeah, you have up on the screen here, a blank screen that just says Mark or Todd cast in Arial. We discussed earlier
in Arial
font,
which is bad. And so what we do is we dispatch another piece that says Mark or Todd cast because we're looking for this exact sequence.
Okay. So you have copy and pasted. So now there are two Mark or Todd casts.
And with that comes the blade.
Ooh. Okay. Right?
And so when it finds the exact sequence of Mark or Todd cast, it will cut exactly in the place that we tell it.
Okay.
And in this case, it's going to be between the O and the R.
Okay.
And then that goes away. And then we introduce a different, so that's done. That's step one.
Uh-huh.
And then step two is we introduce, that's not the thing. And that's not the thing. Yeah. And it was supposed to say
and
instead of.
So
or.
Yeah, you've removed the top market or Toddcast has found and then taken away the or and is, I'm assuming.
There we go.
Okay. Mark, so now we have taken the or away in the bottom.
Taken the or away.
To replace it with.
Right. And so we've added a new sequence of RNA that says, there's an and that goes here. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, it magically just comes down and. And sinks into place and replaces that and.
So this is basically when you're doing a long story or a long Word document and you do a search and replace for every time you see Mark or Toddcast, please make it Mark and Toddcast.
Right.
And so but our body is sending that information on a DNA level.
Yeah. And so this is happening in live cells in your body. And once that's done, those cells will reproduce with that new DNA and RNA.
Okay. Just like in Jurassic Park when they had to replace the missing sequence with the frog DNA.
Exactly. And wasn't that the thing that ultimately did them in because they were able to reproduce without having sex.
Yeah, either change sex or have reproduce without.
Nature always finds a way.
Nature finds a way. I say that all the time. Nature finds a way.
Nature finds a way. So in the end, we are able at this time to say, okay, we know that this gene causes Parkinson's. Here is a sequence that we know will match that little splotch, and it finds it, cuts it down the middle, and we introduce a different patch that applies right over it because it looks for the words Mark Toddcast. And says, there's no other place where this happens.
Uh-huh.
I will fit here perfectly. And it sews it back together.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, you have introduced and injected DNA into a living cell. Which means any trait that we can positively identify in the genome, we can actively manipulate.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
And so they figure that illnesses that are DNA based or genetically based things in the blood, a lot of blood cancers and things like that. For cancers, they're able to say, like, a lot of cancer cells exist and aren't able to be identified by the other guardian cells around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what they're doing is, well, if we splice in this to the guardian cells, they'll be able to detect the cancer and fix it.
Right.
And it all kind of goes back to that cane toad invasion for me. It's like, we you showed me a documentary once.
Yes,
and
it's
loved it.
Yes, there's a great documentary you probably find on YouTube. I don't know. I ended up ordering a DVD of it, but it's called Cane Toads, An Unnatural History.
And it's fantastic. It takes place in northeastern Australia. And there was a bug?
Yeah, there was a bug in the sugar cane.
A bug in the sugar cane. And they were going to eradicate this bug with this frog, this toad, the cane toad.
Yep.
And
it worked.
It worked.
It got rid of those bugs
away. And the cane toads turned out to have no natural predators. And they excrete a painful, numbing serum out of their things. They're massive. They're all over the roads.
Yeah, they're like the size of a dinner plate.
Yeah, they're horrible creatures. They're huge. They sting. They're just terrible creatures, and they're everywhere in this documentary. I don't know what the current status of this is, but we know that we can do this to eliminate Parkinson's, but we don't know what else we are screwing with.
Right.
And that's what's terrifying here.
Yeah.
Is
because I mean, it could be
pull on this string and that pulls five other strings the other way.
Yeah.
And we create this superhuman that now, whatever, they showed, an example of, they had taken a colony of ants and they had manipulated the eggs of 10,000 of these ants and created a colony of these genetically modified ants. And all they had done is reduced the amount of sensitivity in their smell receptors. And that's it.
Okay.
And it eradicated this poor community of ants. It turns out that the smell receptors are so important for the development of the brain that they were underdeveloped. They weren't able to follow pheromones for having community. And so they like just would wander off by themselves and die. They got themselves into trouble because they weren't able to smell the things that would prevent them from getting into bad things.
Right.
And so like it screwed with so many things.
Yeah.
And we just didn't think about the consequences. And this was a specific example to demonstrate that level.
Well, it's like when you, every once in a while you see, they're not bloopers, I guess, but they're, when you make a video game and you're doing you're programming the animation for it or character. And if you tweak it wrong, like all of a sudden their eyeballs will be on the outside of their skin. And it's like this crazy computer glitch that messes up what the character is rendered at. So he has like pointy this, or like it goes all crazy. And it's kind of that same idea, like in that huge long math problem that ends up being your Halo 2 character, like one of those numbers gets wrong and all of a sudden the point that's supposed to go like from the side of your eyeball to your ear is now, you know, 40 feet to the left and poking out to the side.
Exactly.
And it's like all those numbers need to add up. Or who knows, maybe we have something that limits our vision because else our eyes will be burned out of our head from radiation or whatever.
Right. And, and you know, it's not the religious implications of we shouldn't be playing God, but the real implications we shouldn't be playing God.
Right. Well, to quote Jeff Goldblum again in that movie, is like, scientists were so excited that they didn't stop to ask if they should.
Should.
That was my Jeff Goldblum impression.
Well played. And so
that, so can,
I don't have an upper.
I'm always talking about how I want to do an episode on Jonestown, but I don't know how to make it peppy at the end. Is this something that like you can do after, like to adults or to like, is this something that you can, so you can't, it's not just you have to do it by birth or you get cancer
with
and now
more
we can,
physical with or, more dense tissue, it's harder to get those cells to replace. Like you're not going to get your bone cells to replace. They just don't replace themselves
okay, I see,
that often.
I see.
And so
every 7 years you'd have a RoboBody.
Right. Yeah. And so the implications are really great for embryonic work.
Right.
As you shoot stuff into the embryo, that's going to be fully used by the entire body for the rest of their life. And so they can do embryonic work to improve your vision and or, you know, take away whatever, you know, it, oh, it looks like they've got the marker for Parkinson's. Let's take that away.
Bleep, right.
You know, and let's.
Can you imagine dinner time arguments in the future? I did not pay $5,000 extra dollars for you to fail spelling, Shelley.
Exactly.
Gosh, yeah. That's so.
And this is across the board, like military uses. Like if North Korea just invests and says, I'm going to create a breed of superhumans and they will
that
just
explode.
Be.
Oops.
But, you know, more muscles, more stamina, able to metabolize different foods that are greatly abundant or, right. You know, like just choose your superpower and genetically engineer to meet that.
So maybe in the science fiction story that our Earth history is becoming, maybe all these unintended consequences that happen from people, these rich people tinkering with the DNA of their robo babies, I guess it wouldn't be robo, their super babies, all of the rich people eventually die out. Because they, for something goes wrong, now they can't reproduce correctly, all this stuff, and then all of the...
All of their cats are super rich.
What was her name? The Wicked... It was a big 80s thing. Leanna? No. She was a New York developer in the 80s. Leona Hemsley, who was just known as like the Wicked Witch Lady of the Upper East Side because she was this evil developer, and she ended up donating like... $400 million to her cats and none to her children, which was pretty great.
Leona Helmsley, millionaire dog.
Yeah, okay,
Trouble is dead.
Oh,
in 2011.
We're sorry.
Oh,
we're sorry, Trouble. Well, that's really fascinating. And
yeah.
Like, it's, I feel like it's just another one of those things where like, it's an inevitable slide of some, I mean, like self-driving cars, like this, like that. It's in another thing that, and I wonder. I mean, medical science must have some sort of like yearly convention where they discuss ethics. No,
and that's
I mean,
the,
I guess that's good for
that's
reputable
the
doctors,
exactly. And that's the problem is this community recognizes, this scientific community that's doing this recognizes that regulation and the control of this is far in the past compared to where the technology is. The technology is vastly exceeding the ability to monitor, regulate, control, or whatever. And then you have rogue nations who...
Star Wars Rogue Nation?
Star Wars
Rogue
Nations.
That's Rogue One, sorry.
Rogue One. There's rogue nations that aren't... beholden to that.
Right.
And so, you know, if North Korea or, you know, some faction in China or something just goes with it, who's to stop them? And
I think I mentioned earlier, I don't know if I said on the podcast earlier, but earlier today I was just casually checking the headlines to see if we were on World War III yet.
Right.
Just, you know,
just
I've got some time before lunch. Are we?
I mean, they just, you know, it's been a few weeks since they moved the doomsday clock to 2.5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I feel like it's getting closer than that.
We were preemptive about that.
Right.
But boy, I guess we really don't have a way out of it. No.
All right. So.
No, but that's, I mean, that's that. And I think part of it is becoming aware of what these things are and not just for just regular people like us to be
yep.
able to say, like, when this comes up, to talk to people in a way that we're knowledgeable about it and to tell them that this isn't just an exciting new thing that's going to make everything, you know, instantly better with no repercussions. I mean, I think if we're all armed with that knowledge, I mean, it does help in some ways. So it is interesting to talk to, but But thank you, Andre, for that topic suggestion. Yep. It was really great. If anyone else has topics that they want to hear us talk about, you can get a hold of us at facebook.com/markandtoddcast. You can leave a comment or you can leave us a message if you want to stay anonymous. If you want me to ask a question for you that you don't want to ask yourself, I will do that. I will take the, what do you say, take one for the team, I guess, on that one. If you're listening to us and you have subscribed, please take some time to rate us on iTunes, because it does make a big difference on getting the word out there and having the word spread and being part of their algorithm. So please do go rate us on iTunes, subscribe, all that stuff. You can check out markandtoddcast.com for other links and pictures and our last 82 episodes, counting this one. So please do that. Anything else that we have that we want to talk about? My electric bill is due again, so if you want to visit facebook.com/arealpieceofwork, you can go ahead and do that. What should we play out with? Should I just I will do a YouTube search for, here's one called Space Tribe, Genetically Modified Human, and it has a picture of like an Indian deity in some sort of rave club scenario. So we will see you guys next time. Like I said, drop us a line, let us know you're listening, let us know if there's something you want to discuss. Other than that, we will see you next week.
All right, ciao.
I don't know what I expected from a band called Space Tribe's song Genetically Modified Human, but this is sort of what I expected.
It's pretty good.
All right, see you guys next time.